ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
It's a real pleasure to have everyone back together again here after a 5-minute break. Just the fact that we have a place to come to that we feel is in our highest interest, where when coming, no matter what mood we're in and whatever level of spiritual practice we've evolved to, we feel welcome and we feel encouraged. And this is the purpose of the International Site for Krishna Consciousness at Silicon Valley, is to provide an ever-expanding environment in which people can come and experience the happiness that's inherent within them, and that can be experienced very directly by each person through simple processes that are passed down by the great authorities on spiritual life, especially Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the great apostle of spreading love for God all over the world and making it available to everybody. So thank you very much for moving yourself from wherever you were over here. It's not easy to move around the world and to get away from one's own orbit, as there's so many things to do, and Sunday's often the day of rest. But this is the best kind of rest. It's a kind of renewal. And before we go into our discussion, I'll offer my respectful obeisances to His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is seated here on this seat called the Vyasasana. And this is a seat of esteem for one who has imbibed the process of Krishna consciousness from the spiritual master and has been effective at passing it on to others. And not only that, Srila Prabhupada was a pioneer who brought Krishna consciousness to the world in a most unique way, and in very significant ways, ways that will withstand the test of time and already are. The organization of ISKCON is already over 50 years old, which is beating the odds. And furthermore, there are the literatures which he left behind to assure that the culture of Krishna consciousness would be passed on across time and geography to people not just of our generation, but also to those who come 100 years, 200, 500 years after us. And I offer my respects to all of you, because you're all Vaishnavas. You are the most worshipable because, as Krishna mentions many times, his devotees are more dear to him than himself. And one who worships the devotees does the best service to Krishna. He says, in fact, in the Adi Purana, that one who says, I'm your devotee, is not my devotee, but one who says, I'm the devotee of your devotee, is my devotee. And in the Sri Chaitanya Bhagavata, it said, if one is a devotee of Lord Narayan, there's some question about whether he or she will attain perfection. But if one is a devotee of the devotee of Lord Narayan, then there's no question. So all of you are the kinds of devotees in which there's no question. You'll go back to Godhead. You'll attain success because you are worshiping devotees. That's why you're called Vaishnavas. Vaishnavism means, in part, to worship the Vaishnavas. Spiritual practice takes place not in a vacuum, but in our everyday lives, does it not? We have obligations. In fact, just maintaining the body takes a lot of work, wouldn't you say? There are ways in which the body loses altitude pretty quickly if you don't eat for a little while. And what to speak of sleep, and I could go on naming all the other things that are required. Each year, when we go off for a retreat at Govardhan Hill in Vrindavan, we try to maximize the time in which we're together to hear and chant. And we come up with about 5.5 hours a day of direct contact time to hear and chant from the Bhagavatam. But when I think about it, there's 24 hours in a day. What happened to the other 18 and a half? And of course, there are spiritual duties upon spiritual duties. When one tries to extend oneself in spiritual life, and you may also become overwhelmed with the amount of spiritual practice that you have to do. In fact, that's one of the ways Rupa Goswami mentions that one should occupy one's time is 24 hours a day hearing and chanting about Krishna. But even if I try, in the best of circumstances possible, to get direct contact time chanting Hare Krishna or hearing and chanting from the Bhagavatam with others, it requires a lot of a large support system. And for instance, as I was mentioning, Govardhan Hill, devotees come together and they hear and chant, but they have to get there. That takes a lot of endeavor. They have to mark the time off, which is not usual. In America, I think, what do they give you per year? About 5 days off altogether. 5 days off total. If you work for a French company, you might get half a year off. I don't know. I've heard European companies are better about that. But there's an expectation. In Japan, people are expected to come in on their days off, even if they don't have work to do, just to show support to the country, the company. And therefore, there are multiple cases. It's an epidemic of what's called karoshi. It means that people drop dead from working too hard. They push themselves and push themselves. So taking time for one's spiritual life requires some thought and arrangement. And then just on a daily basis, as I mentioned, there are bodily functions that have to be taken care of and so forth. And then, of course, as Brajabihari Prabhu was pointing out in his seminar to us over the last 2 days, there's a battle with the mind. And last week, when we all, several of us, met together and we were talking about various obstacles to spiritual life, I think Manjula Kanta mentioned the fact that every once in a while the mind just shuts off and says, I'm not going to do anymore. Sorry, can't help you. Maybe she or someone else mentioned the phrase or the word frazzled. Has anybody ever heard that word? Is it in the dictionary? Frazzled. What does it mean? Exhausted. We have our dictionary pundits looking it up. No, not at all.
Is a verb cause to feel completely exhausted, wear out?
Cause to feel worn out and exhausted?
Completely exhausted or wear out?
Completely exhausted or worn out?
Wear out, yeah.
Or wear out? Okay. Okay, completely exhausted. And so there's a question then about how to stay motivated even on a bad day. What do you do when you're at, how do you keep your spiritual practice going when you're at your worst? First of all, let me just check in and see if anybody ever felt frazzled before. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Well, that's encouraging. Even Brajabihari Prabhu raised his hand. So, frazzled is a way in which there may be a feeling of what's sometimes called causeless unwillingness to do anymore. I see sometimes when I go for my walk, people like dogs around here, around the Bay Area, and maybe all over America. And sometimes I see an owner who's a master who's walking the dog, and the dog says, no, I'm not going to walk anymore. And I see this tug of war going on. The dog puts its four legs down and, you know, does one of those, this is where it comes in yoga, the downward dog. He's doing a downward dog, and the master's, come on, let's go. You're embarrassing me. But it does, like, no, I won't go. Other animals do it too. Donkeys are famous for that. And just not cooperating. So the mind can be like that also. We come to a point when the mind just says, like, I don't want to go anymore. Or we might have a day when we feel that the amount of things that could have gone wrong went over the limit. How many things can go wrong in one day? Sometimes nothing seeming goes wrong, but then some days, other days, everything seems to go wrong. You can't get it right. And then on top of it all, your door gets locked, nobody has the keys. You have to break a window to get in. Then you get a call from school, the kid's sick. I mean, it can really add up. So there are good days and there are bad days. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna recommends that we learn how to continue our spiritual practice, not just on the good days, but also the bad days also. So what do you do on a bad day? What are some of the ways in which you can continue your spiritual practice, even during the bad days? So let's talk about a few things. And one of the most encouraging pieces of advice that I've heard that I like to keep in mind, even when it seems like the odds are stacked against me, comes from the great Srimad Bhagavatam commentator Sridhar Swami. In the 10th canto, 14th chapter, 8th verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the verse all of you know, Tatenam kampam susimikshamano bunjana evatmakritam vipakam hritvagvapurvir vidridam namaste jiveta yomukte pade sadaya bhag. This verse was spoken by whom? Who? Brahma. Yeah, Brahma prayers. If you don't know this verse, you should run, not walk. Go home and learn it. Write it down. Put it on the dashboard of your car. And look at it carefully. It's the quintessential attitude of the devotee who's practicing Krishna consciousness. And when bad things come, the devotee, 10:14:8, yes. The devotee has a particular mindset about them. And it's expressed in this verse, which we'll see within 10 seconds or less, or your money back from this presentation. If you'll keep scrolling down, we'll get to the English. My dear Lord, this is Brahma praying. One who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. So, when bad things happen to devotees, they feel that it should have been much worse, because of my involvement in the material world for so long, and my ignoring Krishna for so long, I've acted in ignorance, and I've committed I've done reprehensible things for which I deserve much worse. But Krishna is giving me only a token. And when good things happen in a devotee's life, he or she thinks that I didn't deserve this, but it's Krishna's mercy. He's just giving me some facility to increase my service, and he uses whatever comes in Krishna's service. When a materialistic person experiences reversals of fortune, he or she thinks that there must be no God, because I don't deserve any of this, and why should bad things happen to good people like me? Therefore, I have no more faith in the Supreme. And when good things happen, such a materialist would think, what do I need God for anyway? I'm so smart. Look what I manifest in my life just by my own will. But a devotee is submissive to the Supreme and thinking that I'm fully dependent, and earnestly waits for special mercy from the Lord. This is one of the quintessential attitudes of the devotee, is knowing that Krishna's plan for every living entity is completely benevolent. And one of his names, therefore, is Vanchahatita, everyone say. So Vancha, everyone knows, means desire. And Atita means to rise above. Just like in the verse, Mam jayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. That by performing devotional service constantly, one rises above, utita, above the modes of material nature. So vanchatita means that Krishna rewards the desires of his devotees far more than they can ever expect. There's nothing you can do to imagine how perfectly and how abundantly Krishna will fulfill our desires. And so the devotee is very certain that by going on with faith and patience, you got to have faith and patience in devotional service. Because if you do, in time you'll see that things will be fine by the practice of devotional service. I'm just quoting from Dunya's new album. She's a devotee artist who just wrote an album, and then on it there's a beautiful song about having faith and patience. Because if you keep that, in time you'll see things will be fine. One of the lyrics. So the devotee there is very convinced with well-reasoned faith by studying the nature of Krishna and also observing for him or herself how perfectly the world is put together, and considers that the Lord has all good intentions and knows exactly when to administer the kinds of things that I need in my life, and especially his ultimate mercy, bringing me back into his full service, taking me back to Godhead, and so forth. Therefore, the devotee goes on tolerating whatever kinds of things come, either good or bad, and considering them simply incidental, and goes on doing service, and offering respectful obeisances with heart, words, and body. And especially this means offering these kinds of obeisances with heart, words, and body to the words of Srimad Bhagavatam. In a very practical way, the devotees give their heart to the Bhagavatam, recitation of the Bhagavatam, because after all, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the incarnation of Krishna in the age of Kali. Krishna swa dhammo pagate dharma ganadi bisaha kalo nascha drshamesha puranarko dhanodita. When Krishna left the world, he then reappeared simultaneously as the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the devotees, therefore, worship this form of the Lord with their heart, with their words, they speak the Bhagavatam, and in their minds, they think about in their body, they actually offer obeisances to the Srimad Bhagavatam. And such a person who goes on like that in this lifetime, despite what happens, is surely eligible for liberation. Say that. Surely eligible for liberation. Before it has become his rightful claim. So, in the purport, Srila Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary that just as a legitimate son has to simply remain alive to gain an inheritance of his father, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness, following the regular principles of bhakti yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, when you're having a bad day, when you're feeling frazzled, you may not be able to do your utmost in your practice of Krishna consciousness. Is that true? You may feel slightly inhibited by the state of your mind. Possible? So, one of the ways that I like to think about it is that don't try to excel at those points, but simply try to stay alive. Do whatever you have to do to stay alive, because there is a fatalistic mindset in which one might think, well, if I can't do it perfectly, or if I feel frazzled, I must not be a devotee, and therefore I might as well give up. But don't give up. If you have faith and patience, in time you'll see it'll be fine. Just keep faith and patience. And go on doing whatever you can for the time being, at least to stay alive. Don't dump it all and forget your Krishna consciousness, somehow or other stay alive. And if you give it, if you give yourself that concession to do the best you can in those circumstances, just to stay alive, you don't have to excel, then you may feel a little bit more encouraged. So let me just ask you now, what are some of the ways in which you've found that you can stay alive in Krishna consciousness? You're all very vibrant spiritual practitioners, and at the same time, you have responsibilities to attend to. If I'm not incorrect, say yes. So what are some of the ways in which you stay alive on a day-to-day basis, especially when you feel frazzled? Let's hear from you. Yes. Oh, well, you'll need to use the microphone, otherwise you only get 0.05 credit for any point.
Chanting 16 rounds. That's helped me through my whole life full of challenges.
This is an excellent point. So there are what I like to call basics. And if you build these basics into your lifestyle, then it gives you something to rely upon, even when you feel frazzled. Once when I was a brahmachari, I was in the LAX airport, and I felt frazzled for a number of reasons, which I won't go into right now. But I just felt frazzled, so I sat down and I called my mother on the phone from a payphone. And she heard my voice. You know how mothers are. She said, "What's the matter?" I said, "I'm frazzled." I didn't say those exact words, but I unpacked it and explained I was frazzled. And she said to me, "You listen to me. You put your hand in that bag that you chant on, and you start chanting." And I thought, whoa, Krishna, you're watching me wherever I go. Because my mother was not particularly, she wasn't a devotee at that time. Later on, when she was leaving the world, I sat with her the last 4 days, and I had some time to talk. I said, "You remember that time I called you from the phone booth?" She said, "Yes." I said, "Why did you tell me to chant Hare Krishna? You weren't into chanting Hare Krishna at the time." And she said, "I saw you leave the material world. Decidedly, you left it. I didn't want you coming back over the line. I knew that would be a disaster." So she just said, "Keep chanting." And I kept that in my mind. It's like, okay, if you feel frazzled, get your hand, put it in the bead bag. Even if you can't chant, you might be so frazzled, you might feel like, "Yeah, I can't even move my fingers." And then just get them in there. Get them in the bag. pull it up snug. Maybe put the strap around your wrist and tie it. Put it up tight, you know. And then you just sit there. And then someone might come along and go, "Hey, nice, you're chanting your rounds." When I walk around Burlingame chanting sometimes, just the other day I was walking through the park and there was a guy with his two dogs, and I walked past him, and I made some comment because his dogs were going after the squirrel in the tree and he didn't see it. So I said, "You know, there's a squirrel up there." And then the dog came chasing after me. And he goes, "Oh, wait, hold on. Are you a devotee?" And I turned around and I said, "Well, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, right?" And we started a conversation. He said, "I moved here. I'm a devotee, or I'm trying to be, and, you know, I'm in the area here." And 2 weeks before that, I was walking across the railroad tracks out of Burlingame, and there was an Indian couple walked by. And just as they walked by, they go, "Hare Krishna." So if you put your bead bag on, even if you're too frazzled to chant, people will notice you, and they'll say Hare Krishna to you. Or one time I was with Savas. It was the first time I ever walked around Govardhan Hill. Actually, the second. I hadn't been for a long time. And I was going around with Savas. Panchagoda took us around. He was showing the different ways to go. And it was during Holi. And we didn't know it. Holi had started. So Savas and I were not used to walking around Govardhan Hill at that time. And by the time we got all the way to Radhakund, where we had started, we were frazzled. And we were limping along. And first of all, I was barely chanting, or maybe not chanting, and there was a sadhu sitting in the doorway as we walked by, and he looks at me and he goes, "Chant, chant!" And then we got around the corner and these kids jumped out with colors and just blasted us with colors every which way. And I remembered that sadhu, "Keep chanting, don't stop." So this practice of chanting is very powerful. In fact, it's our main foundational practice. When all else fails, and it will, the holy name will be there for us. Apana samstritim gauranya nama vivashogranan tata sadhya vimucheta yabhibheti swayam bhayam. Suta Goswami says early on in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the holy name and Krishna himself are non-different. Therefore, he says, you should take advantage of this. You should always associate with the Lord through his holy name, even in times of danger, because he said that even fear personified is afraid of Krishna. So team up and be there with him. And if you take shelter of this practice, get your hand in your bead bag and anticipate that I may have a day in which I'll feel frazzled. And if you have momentum going into those days, that I put my hand in my bead bag, I tie up the strap around my wrist, and I do my chanting, then you'll have some asset, something in the bank that will carry you forward even during that very difficult time. Because you'll think, here's my friend. Here's the place where I actually feel home, where I feel satisfied, where somebody actually understands me. If nobody else does, Krishna does. He's there within my heart, and he's there within his holy name, and he's here for me. If all else fails, and it will, take shelter of the holy name. What else? Yes. What keeps you alive when you're frazzled?
So I had a very nice session with my mentor, and he had me made the list of the things I don't want to do on those days. Mm-hmm. And I made a list, and he was patiently waiting for me to think it through the list, and I crossed off all the things that I don't have to do it for that day. And that itself helped me so much. And actually, when we crossed off what we don't want to do, it left me with what I want to do for that day. Because those are the days when I think more of what I don't want to do, I can't do this. And so then it just left me with what really matters, what should be done.
I think we need more details. Like, could you give us an example of what you're talking about? It's a good philosophical point, but it's not detailed enough for us to take it home with us, right? So if you could tell us, like, you know, what are things that you might have crossed off your list, and what did you leave?
I didn't want to respond my emails. I didn't want to take any phone calls. I didn't want to go for the...
You ever felt like that? You just don't want any exposure to the outside world? You can relate, right? All the time.
Yeah.
Shivas is a Brahmana. He wants to be Vivekta Sevi. He wants to be out in the forest just studying his shastras. Yes.
Canceled appointments for rest of the week. Cleared out my weekend. Told my parents, give them heads up, I'm not answering anything this weekend. And then I said, okay. Also, I didn't want to actually do some of the reading. And so then I said, okay, what that left me that I could just do it, my rounds and Krishna Balaram Puja, and then feed them two bogas and two artis, and that's all. I mind helped me to agree to do that, and
this is a very important item of staying alive. Find out what your basics are, the things that you can't do without every day. And if you have a time when you're overwhelmed, then say, okay, I'm just doing the basics. I'm going to slim down everything and do the basics, because you win with the basics. And in fact, this is something, a technique that Lord Chaitanya uses. He gives us 64 items of devotional service, correct? Can you name them all? Anyone? Don't look on a device or anything like that. Okay, but you can name five of them, I'll bet, right? Why can you name five of them? Because Lord Chaitanya said, all right, there's 64, but here's five that I really recommend that you do. What are they? One person give me one, and then we'll pass it around, okay? What? Shravanam. Huh? Be very specific. I want it from Shastra. Okay, go ahead.
Sravanam, Kirtanam.
Nice. Very nice. But different from what I want. Yes.
Association with devotees.
Yes. Association with devotees. Be more specific. What kind of devotees? Ones that you hate?
Like-minded devotees. And
what?
Like-minded devotees and who are...
More advanced than oneself. So if you're the smartest one in the room, you're in the wrong room, right? So associate with devotees like-minded, Swajatiya. They're from your same camp. They have the same aspirations as you do. Ultimately, that becomes very important in devotional service. So like-minded devotees who are more advanced than you, if you get that kind of... So that's one thing out of 64, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, this is so powerful that even if you don't have full faith in it, but, and even if you have only a little connection with this, he said, still, you'll remain alive in Krishna consciousness. And you'll thrive. What else?
Worshipping the deities.
Worshipping the deities. It's so important because there are very few images on the 101 freeway. Have you noticed? Who came by the 101? 1, 2, 3. How about the 280? How'd you all get here?
85.
The 35? I never heard of that. 85, all right. Whatever it is. Did you see any images of Radha and Krishna as you were driving down? Did you see any chakras on top? Did you see any pictures of Jesus? See any spiritual pictures at all? If you came on the 101 from Burlingame, you saw Buddha and you saw Ganesh. That's it. Because there's a Buddha right at the car dealership, right when you get past that Wag Hotel where they keep all the dogs. And then there's a big image of the Buddha. And then when you go by Evernote, then you'll see Ganesh. He's there as their main symbol for their company. So we don't get to see God at all. And that's cruel. That's cruel to human beings. Human beings need to have as the central point in their towns and villages some architecture that indicates the Lord lives here. This is the way people have sustained themselves in civilized religious cultures for many, many years. The biggest building in town was the cathedral or the mosque or the church. And everybody would hear the vibration coming from there. They would be able to see the imagery of that. And they would take time every day to bow down. Even in Thailand, as I've mentioned before, when going on the river, the boatman cuts the engine, even if it's for a second, when they go by a Buddhist temple and puts his head down, and then they keep going. We don't get that. We don't see any imagery around us. What do we see instead? You don't even see mom and pop stores anymore, a little variety. What kind of common imagery do you see here and when you go all over the world? Corporate logos and same kind of architecture. What does it look like, the architecture? Like one big box. That's all you get. A box or now the new Salesforce, it's just a spire kind of thing. It's very nondescript. This is not good for the human soul. We need the aesthetics, but the aesthetics that are related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we offer that in the process of Krishna consciousness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasized worshiping the deity. When you live in a home and there's chaos in the house, is there ever time a little chaos? Anybody with kids? You know, things are going every direction and you have projects all over the house lined up. There's one room in your house where you can go in, or one corner at least, where you can go in and see the smiling face of who? Shishi Gorni Thai, Radha Krishna, Krishna Balaram. You need that. The human soul needs to go in and just look in there and think, oh, you're there. You have a smiling face. And Lord Kapiladev brings this up. He says, when the devotees see my smiling face and they smell the incense within the temple, they become imperceptibly liberated. This is the Kanishta Adhikari, and he exalts this, the Kanishtas, as being so magnanimous, so elevated. They've come to this position of appreciating the smiling face of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we have to have deity worship in our life. Otherwise, if we don't see the beautiful forms of Sri Sri Radha Madan Mohan. They're so graceful, holding flute. Krishna's got bare feet. And Prabhupada said, Krishna playing the flute means he's all play and no work. That's Vrindavan. And bare feet, just walking around in the forest and enjoying playing with his friends and hanging out. and having fun with and all the relationships that you have. And if someone comes, we see all the time around ISKCON, people come and they just sit and meditate on the Lord. There was a very nice devotee here earlier, and he told me he comes at off times, and he just comes here and sits and meditates on the Lord. This is very much needed to have this deity worship. And those who then do more in their spiritual life, they want to advance, they go a little more deeply into this. They study about how to worship the deity, and they get a little closer. You see the devotees going out and buying flowers. That's quite an experience. You go to the flower market. In San Francisco, it's only open early in the morning. I used to have this service to drive down to that flower market. And you get down there at about, I forget what time you have to get there. 4 o'clock. You have to get there at 4 a.m. So you get there and you think, what am I doing here at 4 a.m.? And then you realize, oh, I'm here. I'm just buying flowers. I mean, what good are flowers anyway? What do people use them for? They, you know, just to cheer people up. You get a bouquet of flowers or to make things look lively. And we're buying them for Krishna. It's very satisfying to go there. And the mood of sattva-gun is in the air. And, you know, all the different fragrant flowers, and you get to pick them out and think of different arrangements, how to bring them back and decorate the Lord. This makes no linear sense. It doesn't come out in the return on investment materially. What are you spending so much on flowers for the decorating the Supreme Lord and so forth? But actually, the reward is internal. When you offer something to Krishna, Prahlad Maharaj says, then you feel satisfied. So this second item that you mentioned, this deity worship, is vital for the survival of the soul. It's one of the ways to stay alive. If you're feeling down, just come and look at Krishna. Just come and sit here and be in the environment, and you'll see. In time, you'll see that you'll be fine. Yes. We need three more. Yes.
Reading Srimad Bhagavatam.
Reading Srimad Bhagavatam. You want to say more about that?
I mean, we are associating with Srimad Bhagavatam. We are associating with Krishna. Bali read that.
Any of your experience? Where do you sit when you... Do you sit? You have a favorite chair you sit in?
Yeah, these days I'm reading with Madhav Prabhuji, so I
you read with Madhav over the phone or in person?
In person.
You're talking about the Madhav Govinda?
No.
Oh, which Madhav?
My son.
Madhav, your son. Okay, so where do you all sit? Give us a mental image.
Actually, this is for him, I read it in the night, so at least I sit with him when he's about to take his nap, and we read the chapter, the entire chapter with him.
But taking rest for the night?
Yes.
And you sit in his room?
Yes, Prabhuji.
And you read Bhagavatam out loud?
Yes.
And does he listen?
Yes, he listens to the entire chapter. Even if I stop in the middle, he will say, no, complete the chapter, then only I'm going to...
Very good. Everyone should have a madhva in their life. Yes, very nice. So reading Bhagavatam, arranging a time when you can read Bhagavatam to your kids or to your wife or the wife to your husband or together or alone or wherever you can. This is one of the basic activities that Lord Chaitanya said is so powerful that just by doing this on a regular basis, even a little bit, even a tiny little bit, he says, then it will have inordinate spiritual results, positive results. Two more we need. Somebody who hasn't gone yet. Sumati. You need the microphone, otherwise you only get 0.05 credit for every suggestion you make.
Living in a holy place?
What about that?
Well, for me, if you make your home a temple, then it's a holy place. If you keep it sattvic, then it's a holy place. If you're chanting in it, you're in a holy place. And if you live near ISKCON, Silicon Valley, you're in a holy place.
I've seen you other places too. We went to
Alachua,
and I looked back, and there was Sumati in the temple. am I in ISV or am I in Alachua? And it turns out that she spends time there also. So you like to be near a devotee community, right? So this, where Krishna says, wherever devotees are chanting my glories, this is known to be the holiest of places. So if you stay in places where the vibration is going on, then you'll make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Very important. And what's the last one?
Chanting Maha Mantra.
Chanting the Maha Mantra. Okay. Yes, this process of chanting, Lord Chaitanya in fact says, even if you can't do the other ones, if you just do this one, then you make up for all the other ones. So, as you can see, he starts with 64, then he says 5, then he says, okay, there's one that will complete all the other activities. Yes.
We have a mnemonic in Bhakti Shastri to remember all the five. It's ABCDE. So
ABCDE. Okay, go ahead.
Association, Bhagavatam, chanting, deity worship, and entering Vrindavan.
Very good. A. B. C. D. E. Very good. Okay. So, what are some other ways in which you stay alive when you're frazzled? Oh, Vraja Bihari Prabhu, give him the mic and then we'll come back to Vishakalila because Vraja has been trying to get in here for a few rounds.
Take prasadam.
Take prasadam.
Because I figure if everything else fails, nothing's working, but I know if I take spiritual food, then I'm making advancement.
Oh,
so
nice.
Just, drown my sorrows in prasadam.
Where do you get it? In your life, like where do you find it? Is it always there, available at home, or do you go to the temple and take the offering? Do you have to steal it, or what? To what lengths do you go?
It's usually at home. We have a Govardhan Shila that we offer. So also the temple is only a half mile away from where we live. So both of those things. Or I'm traveling a lot, so just making an offering myself, and then.
This works. Take prasadam. And Krishna's most friendly incarnation will lift your spirits by taking prasadam. Yeah, very helpful. Okay, Vishakha.
Prabhu, for me, what works is remembering the instructions of my spiritual master and my commitment towards serving the orders.
So, do you have you don't have to say what it is, but do you have a specific order that you think about, or is it general?
It's general, but in specific about a service that he has given me. So whenever I feel low, or whenever there is a reversal that I'm going through, I think that the purpose of my life is to serve that order and to serve that instruction. And for me to be able to serve that instruction, I need to keep myself alive.
Okay. And that helps you when you're frazzled. Yes.
May I add to that one?
And so, then back to Jagarini.
So regarding the spiritual master or the mentors or the senior devotees, what I have personally, when I think of them, how they're pushing themselves and even putting out the fires and still going on, and for the example I can give, I can see my Guru Maharaj barely can stand in the altar and can barely hold the ghee lamp, but he's still up at 4:30 in the altar to offer the aarti, even though he goes bed at 12:30 at night. So that gives me, I don't try to get there, but at least it gives me just enough push to get off and move to the next step.
Yeah.
And then slowly.
This is an important principle. You can always think of the devotee that inspires you the most, or the devotees, and think, what would they do in a situation like this? How would they conduct themselves right now? Jagarini?
listening to Srila Prabhupada, hearing his voice, bhajan or class, just hearing Prabhupada's voice helps.
So it's important to have these kinds of devices lined up in your life, because when you're frazzled, it's hard to even move your finger, isn't it? You want to make it so easy that you don't have to pull out any drawers or plug in any wires. You should have your house set up so that if you feel frazzled at any time, you barely have to move a finger, because that might even be hard, like moving through cement to try to get to it. Even picking up your bead bag may be very difficult when you feel frazzled. So if you have your house organized, your living space, everything organized, so that when you feel like that, you can somehow or other get the vibration going again and just listen. That can sustain you. The vibration will sustain you. Okay, so how to stay motivated even on a bad day? One of the ways that we've talked about so far is to stay alive. Remember Sridhar Swami's admonition that if you just stay alive in Krishna consciousness, you don't have to be a great Mahatma. You don't have to conquer the world. You don't have to do some great service that everybody in the world notices. But if you just stay alive and go through the various phases of your week, the very phases of your month, of the year, of the decade, of your life, and somehow or other you manage to stay alive, then you'll have such a glorious life that no one could even enumerate the kinds of blessings that you'll get. And that's the essence of the verse, Tate Anukampam Susamikshamanu, is to stay alive somehow or other. Keep yourself and going. Prabhupada uses the word inventive. There's a way in which you have to be inventive, not in that you make up things, but you have to be inventive in bringing your mind back to the authorized system of Krishna consciousness one way or another, even when you do feel down. So in the Shastra, we have examples also of people who are very exalted who have felt frazzled. Can you think of one or two? Great personalities, even incarnations of the Lord, hint, hint, who felt frazzled. Yes?
Dhruva Maharaj, he was very frazzled that he had to get off the lap of his father. So he
okay,
went.
But at that time, although he was a future Paramahamsa, pure devotee, we didn't know that. Nobody knew it yet. How about one that was already recognized? Who? Draupadi? I gave a hint. I said incarnation of the Lord. I'm trying to get the right one. Throw me the right pitch, would you please? Parshuram? All right, they're all wrong. They're not all wrong, but they're wrong for me. I wanted Vyasadeva. Because in the outset of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the fifth chapter, the first canto, we find that Vyasadeva, who is he? He's a Shaktivesha avatar of the Lord. Any other Shaktivesha avatars in here? So if he feels, yes, Srila Prabhupada. So if Srila Vyasadeva can have a bad day, in other words, he felt frazzled. It's very distinctly mentioned in this chapter that he was feeling unhinged, that things weren't going right. So he took shelter of his spiritual master. So this is an important point too. Have some mentors that can help you come back to your basic practice of Krishna consciousness, no matter how despondent you feel at any given time. If you have close to you or at reach, within arm's reach, those who can mentor you and remind you to keep going on the path of Krishna consciousness and help you adjust. So in the case of Vyasadeva, he asked Narada, I feel frazzled. What's wrong? You tell me. You're my spiritual master. What do you think's wrong? So let's take a couple lessons from what Narada Muni told Vyasadeva when he was frazzled. What are some of the reasons he said that Vyasadeva felt like that? Can you all remember? Yes, Gandharvika.
Because First thing Narada Muni pointed out was that he didn't explain the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which means that his works were tinged with materialism. So that he pointed out that that's the root cause of his dissatisfaction.
Okay, very good. So let's look at, did we just lose our control booth? Oh my God, right at the right time. Okay, look at 1.5.14. And 1.5.14, we'll find just what, sorry, Gandharvika said, which is that Narada gave this very helpful prescription, or diagnosis rather. Let's look at the Sanskrit also. It's very interesting. I'll say, please repeat. Tatonyata kinchana yadvavakshata. Pratagdrishastat krita rupanamabhi. Nakad hichit kwa picha dushtita matir. Lapeta vata hatanaur ivaspadam. Tata, from that. Anyata, apart. Kinchana, something. Yet, whatsoever. Vavakshataha, desiring to describe. Pratak, separately. So this first line is, he's saying to him that if you say something, anything, kinchana, could be anything, that is pratak, it's separate from drisha, from the vision of the Lord. In other words, if you talk about things that are disconnected from Krishna consciousness, this is the first part of his analysis of what happened, why Narada felt despondent. Drisha, vision, tatkrita, reactionary to that, rupa, form, Namapi, by names. Nakarichit, never. Kwapi, any. Cha, and. Dushtita, mati, oscillating mind. Lapeta, gains. Here's the one I like. Vata ahata, troubled by the wind. Now, boat. Iva, like. Aspadam, place. And here's a translation. Whatever you desire to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord simply reacts with different forms, names, and results to agitate the mind as the wind agitates a boat which has no resting place. Srila Vyasadeva is the editor of all descriptions of the Vedic literatures, and thus he has described transcendental realization in different ways, namely by fruitive activities, speculative knowledge, mystic power, and devotional service. Besides that, in his various Puranas, he has recommended the worship of so many demigods in different forms and names. The result is that people in general are puzzled. What are they?
Puzzled.
How to fix their minds in the service of the Lord. They're always disturbed about finding the real path of self-realization. Srila Naradadeva is stressing this particular defect in the Vedic literatures compiled by Vyasadeva, and thus he is trying to emphasize describing everything in relation with the Supreme Lord and no one else. In fact, there is nothing existent except the Lord. The Lord is manifested in different expansions. He is the root of the complete tree. He is the stomach of the complete body. Pouring water on the root is the right process to water the tree, as much as feeding the stomach supplies energy to all parts of the body. Therefore, Srila Vyasadeva should not have compiled any Puranas other than the Bhagavat Purana, because a slight deviation from that might create havoc for self-realization. So take a moment to think about, he's telling him he shouldn't have written any of the other Puranas, just the Srimad Bhagavatam, right? What to speak of consuming other kinds of literatures, which he mentions in other verses in this chapter, in which he says that these are for inferior kinds of people. They're not meant for those who are progressing on the spiritual path. So this is one of the ways in which one becomes despondent, is by not staying in touch with the direct katha that comes from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so one might then notice that if I turn my attention back to hearing Krishna katha, especially from the Bhagavatam, that I will naturally be lifted back up again and come to the point of feeling encouraged in my spiritual life. Never underestimate the power of Maya, however, to convince one not to go and open the Bhagavatam. This is something that we heard in the seminar today or yesterday. Braja Bihari Prabhu was talking about how the Bhagavatam, and then juxtaposing it with the internet or Facebook or something like that. It has a lot of images and a lot of stories. There are a lot of stories that come across CNN, for instance. And those kinds of things flow in, and they have no consequence except to agitate the mind like a boat on the water has no resting place. It's blown by the wind. But instead, if one turns one's attention to the Bhagavatam somehow or other and hears something, then one can be immediately cured of this feeling of despondency by hearing direct Krishna katha. What to speak if you ingest it regularly? Therefore, it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam itself, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, that you have to do this constantly. And our acharyas say that if you tell that to people who feel frazzled from time to time, they will feel so even more frazzled. They'll feel discouraged and they'll say, oh, I can't do this. Therefore, they say it means, that is Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, that, and Jiva Goswami, that Nityam Bhagavata Sevata means at least once a day. So if at any time you feel despondent, you might go back and say, did I take my medicine today? Did I hear Bhagavatam? Because if not, I might be blown all over the place by the various kinds of other vibrations that will naturally flow into my life. Continuing, pouring water on the root is the right process to water the tree, as much as feeding the stomach supplies energy to all parts of the body. Therefore, Srila Vyasadeva should not have compiled any Puranas other than the Bhagavat Purana, because a slight deviation from that might create havoc for self-realization. If a slight deviation can create such havoc, then what to speak of deliberate expansion of the ideas separate from the absolute personality of Godhead? So there are literatures and information that are deliberately going in the other direction. In other words, they're presenting philosophies that may even discourage your very worship, your impetus to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For instance, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, if you listen to Mayavad philosophy, your desire to worship the Supreme Lord can be killed by hearing that. So vital is the process of hearing from the right source, which is Srimad Bhagavatam commentated by pure devotees. Continuing. Let's see if I can continue where I left off so we don't get in an infinite loop. If a slight deviation can create such havoc, then what to speak of deliberate expansion of the ideas separate from the absolute truth personality of God. And we've heard a lot about that recently, the way in which for instance, in schools, textbooks are compiled. And we had an exposition of this scientifically presented to us by Michael Cremo, whose spiritual name is Druta Karma Prabhu. He spoke at Stanford quite recently, within the last 10 years. And he showed us how there's a systematic way in which certain scientific communities guard their particular theories and only let in certain amounts of information into textbooks and certain kinds of information that support their various theories. And they're the guardians of this kind of information. And therefore, there's a mass inculcation of a particular way of looking at the world and understanding what the goal of life is that comes in to the school systems and so forth. And that's deliberate. And so if one doesn't counteract that influence, then one will be taken in another direction besides bhakti and feel morose. If a slight deviation can create such havoc, then what to speak of deliberate expansion of the ideas separate from the absolute truth personality of Godhead? The most defective part of worshiping demigods is that it creates a definite conception of pantheism, ending disastrously in many religious sects, detrimental to the progress of the principles of the Bhagavatam, which alone can give accurate direction for self-realization in eternal relation with the personality of Godhead by devotional service and transcendental love. The example of a boat disturbed by whirling wind is suitable in this respect. The diverted mind of the pantheist can never reach the perfection of self-realization due to the disturbed condition of the selection of object. So the selection of object is extremely important. And this is the prescription that Narada then gives, is to stay close to the descriptions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This will cure your despondency. He says this is the root cause. So if you build the kind of system in your life so that you can stay close to the basics every day and not become drawn into the various other kinds of distractions that will naturally come in. For instance, one of the ways to do this is by planning ahead of time. Just as anybody who has children, anyone who's had toddlers in their home, show of hands, two or three, just four, five. Five people have had toddlers. Do you have to do anything different to your house? What do you have to do? It's called baby-proofing. You baby-proof your house. So the mind, before it becomes mature in the practice of bhakti, is also like a little baby. It wants to go all over the place. It's called chanchala. So you have to baby-proof your life. Because like when you baby-proof for your house, what do you do? Tell us.
Take all the sharp objects within their reach, and then all the tables, put like a safeguard there so they bump into it, they don't hurt themselves. And take anything that can be breakable outside their reach, like put it up high.
Yeah. So in a similar way, you have to look around in your life and you have to baby-proof it. You think, my mind is going to see that and it's going to go after it. You can anticipate that. And you say, get it out of here. Put it somewhere else. Give it away. Make sure that your environment is baby-proof for your mind so that it doesn't go after the various things that you know will be detrimental. Keep them out of your environment. And the other way in which one can help oneself is to plan ahead. This is part of planning ahead, is to baby-proof. But to have some specific goals for one's basics every day. For instance, if you have a number that you're shooting for instance, when you're chanting rounds, if there's a certain number, this is called Sankhya Purvaka. That means numerical strength. You have the strength when the mind says, I'm not interested, you say, that's okay, even if you're not interested, I still have to complete the certain number. And you finish it every day without fail. That helps to have that. And what other things that can you count in your practice of daily bhakti? Even if it's a small number, that will help give you spiritual strength. Yes?
Maybe the pages.
Maybe the pages. Say absolutely the pages. Page by page, you'll be a sage. Be a sage, yes. You count the pages, right?
Count the pages.
You can count pages, you can count shlokas. Sometimes people count time that they spend reading. I heard one devotee say, you know, it was hard to keep track of how many pages, so I just do an hour a day or 15 minutes or 5 minutes or 2 minutes or whatever it is to make sure that you do a certain amount. What else can you count? Yes?
Hear Krishna stories.
How many Krishna? Yeah, so you hear a Krishna story every day?
Yeah.
Yes, you can do that. How many, what else? Gulab jamun? Is that what you said? You said gulab jamun? How many gulab jamuns you take every day? How many chapters you read? What else can you count? Anything else countable? Rounds, number of rounds you can count? Yes? How many artiques you offer? We do that here. We count how many artiques we offer. This is on the platform of Vaidhi Bhakti. Therefore, we do all the artiques every day. We don't say, oh, today I'll just go wander in the forest with Krishna. I don't think he needs an artique today. We keep counting very carefully because the mind will take advantage. Yeah.
Number of new people you met or distributed books or given them Krishna consciousness.
There's lots of ways to count. And this is recommended. Sankhya Purvaka Nama Gananati Bhi Kalavasani Krito. The Goswamis of Vrindavan counted everything. They counted all the times they bowed down. It was scheduled. They scheduled it out ahead of time. So Agmandino used to say, never greet the dawn without a map, as you'll be wiped out by the material energy. So have a plan. So one of the basics, chant a chapter of Bhagavad Gita every day, or at least a portion of it. Stay close to Bhagavad Gita, even if you can only do five verses, or five's nice as a minimum, to do five verses a day. You'll find that Krishna actually speaks to you in those verses. And right in the middle of reading it, you'll feel that Krishna just saved me a lot of trouble from falling into the material energy again. Just from hearing his words in five verses, you can do that. And you may chant your rounds, and you may not be inspired when you begin. And you might think, I don't really have time to chant my rounds, nor do I have any interest. Of course, it's really interesting if somebody called you up, even if they were on the cell phone and you could barely hear them, but you thought they said you just won the lottery. You'd listen very carefully. So it's not a matter of time, it's a matter of taste. And there's a way in which if you chant Hare Krishna, even when you don't feel like it, then the light comes through. And there's a point during which you think, oh, now I can see the light. Now I can make good decisions. Now I feel fortified. So this is the importance of having a daily spiritual practice, at least the basics. Find out what your basics are according to your taste and according to your capability, but stick with them every day and develop this kind of what's called yoga balena, spiritual strength, so that you can overcome the various other distractions that Brajabihari Prabhu is enumerating in the last 2 days, that will bring you to the point of feeling morose and feeling frazzled. And there is a platform that Krishna describes again and again, not only in the Bhagavad Gita, but also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that one comes to where one no longer feels frazzled. Those days of feeling frazzled can be left behind when there's a certain stage which one reaches, when one's no longer disturbed by these kinds of bad days. This is called nishta, or steadiness. It's an absence of frazzlement, no more frazzlement in one's life. This kind of fatigue we described as this is one of the symptoms of or anartas or the obstacles to practicing devotional service. That even though there's no distraction and even though one's not tired, one might just simply say, "I'm not interested. I don't want to do it." But that can be overcome by taking the very basics and continuing them over a period of time, and one will come to the point of having an awakening of interest within one's heart. To that degree, yesterday Srivas Pandit Prabhu brought up a verse from the Brahma Samhita, which we can look at really quickly, and that is Brahma Samhita. I didn't write down, but it's Pramanais Tat Saracharais Tarbyasera Nirantaram. What number is that? 55. He thinks. And in this verse, it says, take help from the scriptures, pramanais, tacharacharais, and modify your behavior, tarabhyasar, and then practice every day. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, by slow degrees, you'll come to the position of feeling enlivened in devotional service. There it is. Let's read it together. 559. The highest devotion is attained by slow degrees, by the method of constant endeavor for self-realization, with the help of scriptural evidence, theistic conduct, and perseverance in practice. So, I hear oftentimes devotees, when they read this verse, they very much gravitate towards by slow degrees, because this is something we can accommodate by slow degrees. We grow by slow degrees. Even when we're growing, we don't even notice it until we meet somebody else and says, oh, you've grown. So in nature, things of value, like the human brain and body and so forth, take some time to develop. Sometimes it takes like 20 years, sometimes even longer, for kids to actually develop. And so in a similar way, bhakti takes time, the practice of bhakti. So stay alive. Don't become frazzled that you're not going to get there. You will. And the last verse, which I'll bring into evidence today in this regard, is one that we've brought up again and again in this class because it's so encouraging, in which Krishna talks about the interim period in which one may be practicing devotional service but feeling that one doesn't have the strength to stay steady, and that what should one do then? I believe the verse is Jata Shraddha Makkatasu Nirvina Sarva Karmasu. Can you tell him the number, please? He'll put it up. So in this verse, Ukarvin, what you say what the verse number is? Jata Shraddha means that one's faith has awakened in hearing about Krishna. Makkatasu Nirvina Sarva Karmasu. One feels that he's not attracted to material life. Veda dukatmakam kamam, because the devotee knows that material activities, they do just disturb me. They make my life miserable, material topics and so forth. But, he says, Veda dukatmakam kamam prityagya pyanishvara, and that is, but still he doesn't have the strength to do the right thing. Does that sound familiar ever? Is this kind of the state of feeling frazzled, that you know what to do but you can't do it, right? So that's what he's describing. Pratyagya pyanishvara. So this means, can we just have the verse? Mukarvin, what is the verse number, please? Yes. 11, 20, 27, and 28. Thank you very much. The pundits are all spread around today. And we'll have that verse for you to look at, to feast on. You'll feel so encouraged when you see this verse, and you could take it with you in your heart. This is Krishna speaking. Prityagya pyanishvarat. Then we can read together. Tato bhajeta mam priyita shradalur dridanishchaya jushamanas tatan kaman dukodarkam shagarayan. And here's your translation. Here's what you've won. This is your parting gift for the day. Having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotees should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction. Even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents of such activities. So in this verse, we're directed to go on with our practice of devotional service despite the fact that we may feel frazzled or have bad days. And we should be happy that we're on the right path, even though we haven't perfected it yet. And keep going, because you will come to that position of feeling always inspired and always eager to hear. It's a very, very advanced stage, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that the way you get there is krame krame, step by step, one little step at a time, and everything counts. Every single investment you give to the practice of bhakti will be cumulative. You never lose it. Every sincere act you do to try to do the right thing. Om Tat Sat. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming to ISKCON of Silicon Valley. Thanks for everyone who joined us online. If you'd like to say hello to your brethren online, let's just turn to the camera and say, Hare Krishna. Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman, hey, Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman.